Okay, so I will talk about Hecke operators and representations that arise from modular forms. So I first start by recalling the three definitions of modular form from last talk. So a modular form of level one, so the three definitions we saw in at least in the first part of Frank's talk. First of all, functions on the upper half plane that transform under SL to Z by the familiar formula. And the function should be holomorphic, and there's a growth condition at infinity. And then secondly, modular forms are functions on lattices in C, such that f of mu times a lattice, or I guess I used lambda, lambda times a lattice, is lambda to the negative k times f of capital lambda for all lambda in C cross, so as the lattice runs through the homothetic class. And again, one has holomorphicity and growth conditions. And thirdly, modular forms are also functions on pairs consisting of an elliptic curve and a holomorphic differential on the elliptic curve. To the complex numbers, such that f of e comma lambda omega is lambda to the k f of e omega. So I also now got confused about the plus minus one, but I'm pretty sure it's correct here. Not sure about the other places, but these powers are correct, I believe. And then, again, there's a holomorphicity and growth condition. And we saw that we could also think of modular forms in this third definition as sections over the modular curve, the compactified modular curve x of 1, which has the cusps of a Lyme bundle. And maybe let me underline it just to distinguish it from the one form. So omega tensor k. Okay. So i.e. f is in that. This includes the definition of holomorphicity and growth. So what are Hecke operators? So the nicest place where to define Hecke operators is somehow the second one. So let me fix an integer n at least one. Then if we have we can define an operator Tn of f just by saying what it does on a lattice, namely it sends a lattice lambda to the sum of f of lambda prime over all sublattices of index lambda. So lambda prime is a lattice, and lambda prime, the index, is equal to n. And from this definition, it's obvious that this is a modular form. At least it's obvious that it satisfies the transformation properties under scaling. If we put in lambda times lattice, we get lambda to the minus k of what we had before. And it's not hard to check holomorphicity and growth. So this gives the Hecke operator Tn. And classically, one puts a 1 over n there. So my formulas will look slightly off because of this. But I will not put this. And so now let's go to the first point of view next. So in this definition one, and let me in this case just restrict to the case when n is a prime. So then we have tau, a number in the upper half plane, which corresponds to the lattice lambda, which is z plus z tau. And we should look now at all sublattices of index p. So that's or index n, but it's easier when n is prime, so we can just write them down as z plus z times tau plus l over p, where l runs from 0 to p minus 1, and 1 over pz plus z tau. So that's an easy exercise, which I'm sure you've seen before. And from this we get that in from the first point of view, tau pf of tau is nothing but the sum from 0 to p minus 1 of f tau plus l over p plus, well, in the last case, we need to scale in order to go back to a lattice of the form z plus something, z times something in the upper half plane, which is scale the lattice by p. So we get that p to the negative k, we scale by 1 over, this is 1 over p times the lattice of the right kind, so it's p to the plus k times f of p tau, which is p times the classical formula. And now for the third definition, so remember that a lattice lambda contains the information of the elliptic curve E, which is C mod lambda, but it contains an extra bit of information, which is in the holomorphic one form. So we take omega, which is dz. That gives us a bijection between lattices and these pairs. And then if we have a pair lambda lambda prime where the index is equal to p of lambda prime in lambda, then this is the same as a map between the corresponding elliptic curves from E prime, which is C mod lambda prime, to E, which is C mod lambda. And the index condition just tells us that this is a map whose kernel has size p, so this is a degree p cover, isogeny. And the differential is dz for both of them, because the pullback of dz is dz. And so now the elliptic curves are parameterized by the modular curve y of 1. And up here we have y0p, which is parameterizing these degree p maps, namely e prime alpha, where alpha is a map from e prime to e of degree p, up to isomorphism. And we can project this to the two elliptic curves E and E prime. And then what does this definition do? So if you think about it, it's the following. So this is pi 1 and pi 2. So what it does is tp of f, so if f is in h0, and maybe I'll say for the moment just y1 omega to the k, where one has to put a growth condition, tpf is pi 1 lower star pi 2 upper star of f. So we start with where pi 1 lower star means sum over the fibers. So if we want to evaluate on some pair e comma omega, we look at the fibers of pi 1, so this gives us all the e primes that cover of degree p, and in order to evaluate we just look at what it does on e prime. That's the pullback. And then you check it extends to the cusp. So it really works when you put x of 1s and x 0 of p's. Okay. And now let me just say that if we put all these Hecke operators together, we get the Hecke algebra, which is just generated by all the TNs. And this is commutative, as one can check. And an eigenform, I recall, is a modular form of some fixed weight k that is invariant, that is an eigenvector for all the TNs, for the whole Hecke algebra, in other words. And if it's equal, if its Q expansion is equal to An Q to the n, so Q is e to the 2 pi I tau, and n runs from 0 to infinity, which is expressing the holomorphicity of the modular form, then with the normalization I put over there, TNF is n times ANF. So usually it's just ANF. Okay, so these are Hecke operators and how to think about them in these three definitions. And so what I want to explain next is how modular forms give rise to representations. And for this, the second point of view is the most suitable. Somehow the first point of view is somehow the one of analysis, the second of representation theory maybe, and the third of algebraic geometry. So let's look at modular forms as functions on lattices. So how do modular forms give rise to representations of, well, I will just, in this talk, I will focus on one prime number p. And in later talks, so later today, Yannis will talk about what happens at the prime, at the infinite prime, and then I think on tomorrow, is that tomorrow? I see. And then maybe on Wednesday, we'll see what happens when you put all of them together. Is that right? Okay. So let's fix some integer capital N, at least one, and look at lattices with level structure. So let me define lat N. Does this microphone make some funny noises? Okay. So lat n, let this be the set of pairs consisting of a lattice lambda in the complex numbers as before, and the function j, so lambda is a lattice in C, and j is a level n structure, so it's an isomorphism between z mod n squared, this finite abelian group, with the n torsion in the elliptic curve. So it's 1 over n lambda mod lambda. So these are isomorphic groups, and J is an isomorphism between them. And this is a level structure. So the level structures will be the key to get representations. Okay, so now I shouldn't forget to put this useful tool. It works almost perfectly. So now, let me generalize. So now I've generalized slightly what the lattices are, and now let me generalize what modular forms are in level n. So let capital MN be the set of all functions on lat n to the complex numbers that have the corresponding property that we had over there when n was equal to 1. So when n is equal to 1, we just have a lattice. There's nothing else in the definition here. But more generally, we ask that when we scale the lattice by some non-zero complex number lambda, and Well, I mean, we have to correspondingly scale the level structure because this just parameterizes the nth version of C mod lambda, but now it needs to be the nth version of C mod lambda lambda. So what I need to do is I need to scale lambda by this factor lambda. Sorry, maybe I should use mu after all. There's some advantage to that. Okay, mu. So I can just scale, by scaling the lattice lambda, I also scale the nth version. And then it's mu to the minus k as before times f of lambda j. So for all mu in C star, C cross. And I shouldn't forget, as before, there is a holomorphicity and a growth condition at infinity. But I will not worry about this. But it's just as before. And now let me, we can make this set lat n, we can find a better description of it, namely there are natural group actions on it. So for that, it's best to fix a basis of C as R squared by taking the basis I and 1. And then on lat n, we have an action of GL2 of R, because I identified, so this is where why it's useful to fix a basis. Otherwise, what you really have acting is the real automorphisms of the complex numbers. But now with the basis, it's just GL2 of R. It just acts by changing the basis. And on the other hand, we have this isomorphism from C mod n squared to something else. We can just act by automorphisms also of C mod n squared. So this is a rank 2 free module over C mod n. So we also have an action of GL2 Z mod n by changing the basis of that rank 2 module. So these are commuting. So these are commuting actions because, well, maybe let me write down explicitly what they do first, and then it will be obvious that they commute. So if I take an element alpha in GL2R and an element beta in GL2Z mod n, or Z mod n, then alpha of lambda comma j is, well, I guess you might want to say it's alpha lambda alpha j, alpha composed with j. So just as what I said before for the action of C cross, but in fact, in order to make the A tau plus B and C tau plus D come out, you shouldn't put alpha, but you should put the transpose of alpha. So that's somehow the fault of the people in the 19th century in some sense, or before that. And then, so we get the right action, in fact. And then on the other hand, the element beta on lambda j is, it doesn't do anything on the lattice, it just changes the level structure. So it changes the level structure to J composed with the automorphism of Z mod n squared. And in order to make things compatible, it should be transpose beta inverse. And because of the transposes, these are now right actions. And they commute. So it's commuting right actions. Okay, and now let's fix a base point in lat n. So a base point, a nice base point in this set of lattices with level n structure is the lattice, first of all, z plus zi. And as level n structure, I just take the one coming from the basis I fixed of the complex numbers, which is I over n and 1 over n. So this is where the first basis, I mean, where 1, 0 goes and where 0, 1 goes of Z mod n squared, Z mod n squared. And then, so we have the action of the two GL2s of the product group. What's the stabilizer of this base point? Well, the stabilizer of this lattice, since 1 and I is just the standard basis, this is just GL2z. But this still messes around with the level structure. But it does whatever it does on the level structure, and we undo it using the GL2z mod n action. So the stabilizer is GL2z. And the orbit of the action, if we act on this base point, is everything. Because, so why is the orbit everything? If I act GL2r, I can certainly get from one lattice to any other lattice, because this is just changing any fixed basis to any other fixed basis. And then I use the GL2z mod n action to make the level structure right, because this just is transitive on level structures. So action transitive. So in other words, lat n, and this is a homogeneous space. It's the group, which is GL2r cross GL2z mod n, modulo the stabilizer. And since the action is right, I should put the stabilizer here on the left. So it's GL2z, which is sitting in the product group diagonally. And now, okay, so now we can also relate this back to the upper half plane. So we have a natural, we have a function from the upper half plane to lattices, just like before. So the map is theta sense tau, which I'll write as u plus iv. It sends tau to the lattice given by tau, which is z plus z tau, and then as level structure, just the one given by the basis 1 tau. So let's take tau over n, 1 over n. So this gives an embedding of the upper half plane in the space of lattices. And in under this isomorphism, you can check that this goes to the matrix V, U1, and the identity. So it's V, U1 because I fix the basis in the order I, 1. I is the first basis vector, so this corresponds to VI, for example. Hopefully I got this correct. Yeah, it's because of the transpose, exactly. You have to do the transpose, so you get VU1, which corresponds to IV plus U, yes, which is tau. Okay, and now, so let me call this, for future reference, star N. This map induces, if we pass to homotherty classes of lattices. So remember when we took lattices and modded out by homotherty, we just got elliptic curves. And here we get elliptic curves with a level structure. So lat n modulo c cross, acting on the right on the GL2, acting on the right on the lat n. We get the map from the upper half plane. And then you check that the it becomes injective once we pass to the quotient of H modulo the level n subgroup gamma n. So the elements in SL2Z that are 1 modulo, the identity modulo n. So this is, and this is a lattices with level structure up to homotherty. This is like elliptic curves with a usual level n structure. And on the far right, so this becomes the double coset space GL2z GL2r GL2z mod n and C star, where C star acts on GL2r, and with our fixed basis, in fact, this corresponds to r cross times SO2r. SO2r are the elements of absolute value 1, and r cross is r cross. And on the right-hand side, on here, we still have a GL2z mod n action. We no longer have the GL2r action because we modded out by something in GL2r, but we still have the GL2z mod n action. And now it's a simple exercise to check, because the question is now, how far is this set of homothetic classes of lattices with level n structure away from H mod gamma n? When n is equal to 1, we know it's the same. Lattices up to homotheta is the same as the upper half plane modulo SL2z. But for a bigger n, this is not the same, but it's close. Namely, the right-hand side is all the translates under the GL2z mod n action of H mod gamma n. So it's, but more precisely, it's the disjoint union of some of these translates. Namely, it's only the determinant that matters. So it's gamma in GL2z mod n with SL2z mod n acting trivially. SL2z mod n just fixes this modular curve, H mod gamma n. And this is something you have maybe seen before, because it's just the usual SL2z action. On here, it preserves gamma n, the normal subgroup. So this is Z mod n cross. So this space of lattices with level n structure modulo up to homotheta is just the same as Z mod n cross copies of H mod gamma n. And if you want this Z mod n cross, this is the Weil pairing of the n torsion of the elliptic curve. And if we now have a modular form of level n, as I defined over here, functions on lattices, when we pull that back to the upper half plane and move it around by the GL2z mod n action, we see that Mn is the same as Z mod n cross copies of classical modular forms of level gamma n. So it's phi n, which is the same as Z mod n cross copies of classical modular forms of level gamma n. But this bijection is non-canonical. We have to fix representatives for the determinant. Yeah, so somehow if you wanted to stay in the classical picture and just work with modular forms of level gamma n, then you cannot see a GL2 action. You can at best see an SL2 action. So that's the reason why it's natural to look at full level n structures as I did here, because you get the action of a bigger group. You see more symmetries. And it's very natural from the point of view of lattices, and not as natural from the point of view of analysis. And now on this, so far we have an action of GL2z mod n. How do we get an action of GL2qp? So in a first step, one gets an action of GL2zp by varying the level structure. So let's vary the level. If m divides n, there's a nice compatibility between level n and level m. So we have natural maps. from this sequence star n. I guess this refers to this whole thing. Not, maybe I should have let it refer to the top thing, really, not to the formula. From star n to star m. So we have the upper half plane on the left. This is the same. It's going to lattices with level n structure. We can go to lattices with level m structure for the smaller m by forgetting the part of the level structure that contained more information. So, for example, we can go to level 1 by just forgetting all of J. And then we get to the quotient, the coset space, which I won't write down again, but we just have a natural map of between the coset spaces just by the natural map of GL2Z mod n to GL2Z mod m. And so I could use all levels n, but since I only want to show you the action of GL2QP, let me restrict. So we could use all n, and then we actually get a bigger action than GL2QP, but let's take just n, which is powers of fx prime p. And then sort of in the limit, we get the following. We get m p infinity. Let me write out the definition first. It's functions on GL2Z, GL2R, cross GL2ZP now, the whole periodic integers to the complex numbers, such that the following conditions hold. The first one is as before, it has the scaling property under the C star action, C cross action. So F of G, and by G I mean the pair of GL2R and GL2QP, ZP. G times lambda is, or I said mu, I guess, now, is mu to the negative K times F of G for all mu in C cross. And remember, this is identified under our choice of basis with R cross times SO2R. That's the first condition, which is the one we saw before. And there's a second condition now that ensures that all of these functions really come from modular forms of some finite level. So F of G times U is F of G for all u in Km, where K of M is the kernel of GL2ZP to GL2Z mod P to the M. For some M. And then finally, we have the holomorphicity and the growth conditions. So we get a much bigger space than before. This is infinite dimensional. More precisely, from the second part of this definition, we see that MP infinity is nothing but the union over all M over the spaces where the action, so we have the invariance under KM. So it's MP infinity KM invariant. with KM. I mean, KM is in GL2ZP, so it acts just on the second coordinate of GL2R across GL2ZP. And what is this? This is nothing, and the KM invariants are nothing but, I mean, it's a function on GL2R across GL2ZP, but it's invariant under the kernel to GL2Z mod P to the M. So in fact, it's just a function on GL2R across GL2Z mod P to the M. So this is nothing but the space we had before. Okay? But the good thing is, we now clearly, by right multiplication on this bigger space, have an action of GL2ZP. It's just putting together all the actions of GL2Z mod P to the M's we saw on the individual spaces. So how do we go to GL2QP? So here we use some approximation lemma. So the lemma is the following. This space, GL2Z, GL2R, cross GL2ZP, under the natural map, inclusion map, is isomorphic to GL2Z with P inverted. So we allow P in the denominators. GL2R cross GL2QP. So this is the claim. And why is this true? First of all, why is this map surjective? To see that it's surjective, it comes down to seeing that GL2Z1 over P, which is how much we can move things around on the right, times GL2ZP, which is what comes from the left. The GL2R somehow doesn't really do anything, is equal to GL2 of QP. And this is true, so this is okay, because that rational numbers that only have powers of P in the denominator are dense in QP. Just by definition of the periodic numbers. And then, why is this injective? It's injective because GL2Z1 on P intersect GL2ZP. Well, these are periodic integers which are, or in other, I mean, maybe better, it's rational numbers that only have P in the denominator, but they are also integral at P, so in fact it's GL2Z. So this is what gives injectivity. But once we have this lemma, it's now clear that the right translation by GL2ZP on the left, which is still right translation by GL2ZP on the right, extends to a right translation by GL2QP on the right. So the GL2ZP action we have extends to a GL2QP action. Because MP infinity is just certain functions on this space. And we clearly have a GL2QP action on the space by right multiplication. And now let me show you that one can really make this action explicit in some particular example, at least. So I want to make the action explicit of the element 100P. So let's start with a classical model of form of level 1. So F is an M of 1. So it's a classical. Remember, in level 1, there are no funny components. It's just one modular curve. That's all. Classical modular form of level 1 and some weight k. And now if we act 100P in GL2QP of F, well, first of all, it's not hard to check by doing a little commutation with 100p, that this is fixed by k of 1. So in other words, this is in the space M of p. And that means if we compose with the map theta, which goes from the upper half plane to this double to this coset space, we get a classical modular form of level gamma n. And the question is, what is this classical modular form of level gamma p? Sorry, of level gamma p. So this is a classical modular form of level gamma p. In fact, it's not hard to see by using commutators or by just seeing what we get at the end. It's in fact of level gamma 0p. So let me just briefly give the computation. So 1p, because I'm not sure where such a thing is written down, 100pf evaluated on theta tau, or composed with theta evaluated on tau, is the same by definition as 1pf evaluated by the formula down here. So it's evaluated on vu01, 1. And then by definition of the action, GL2QP acts. So now I'm thinking of this coset space via the lemma as this coset space which admits the action of GL2QP. And the action of GL2QP is by right multiplication in the second coordinate. So what we get is just f of vu01, 1p. And then I can use the GL2Z 1 over p invariance on the left in this space of the lemma, because 100p is in here. So what I get is f of, well, it's a diagonal action, so it's 1p inverse on the left, vu1, 1. So this is by GL2Z1 on p invariant. And then I can scale on the left, in the left coordinate, by the C star C cross action, and I scale by the by p. So this pulls out the p to the negative k times. So instead of 1p inverse, now I have p1, which gives me pvpu1, 1 by scaling p in c cross. And finally, this is, we are just back to the definition. It's p to the minus k of f, maybe composed with theta, of p times tau, because I scaled both the real and the imaginary part by tau, by p. So this is the answer, and this is nothing but the classical degeneracy map from level 1 to level p. So degeneracy from the theory of old and new forms. Now this board is coming down too. Or not? I hope not. Yeah, so in fact, if you play around a little bit more with this and use that any matrix in GL2QP can be obtained from a diagonal matrix with powers of P in the diagonal and GL2ZP action on the left and right, you can convince yourself that the whole GL2QP action really just comes down to degeneracy maps and moving around the level by GL2ZP. So this is what the GL2QP action is. And now if we start with a new form, F, but in fact, for simplicity of notation, I'm just sticking to level 1, so it's just an eigenform of level 1. Then I define, but more generally one could take any new form of level prime to P. Then we get pi, or even of any level, but then one has to say something more than what I said here, slightly more. Pi f comma p is the GL2QP representation generated by f in mp infinity. mp infinity has this GL2QP action, so we can just take whatever we get by translating around. And by definition, notice that pi fp, since the space mp infinity is a union of the spaces that are invariant on the km, the same is true for the sub-representation. So it's pi fp km invariant for all m at least one. And this is what one calls smooth. This is a smooth representation of GL2QP. Every vector is fixed by some congruence, or one could equivalently say by some compact open subgroup, but it's enough to use congruent subgroups. And the theorem, which in some sense that goes back to Atkin and Lehner theory of new forms, although they didn't think about it this way, says that pi fp is irreducible. So there's no invariant subspace under the GL2QP action except for zero and the whole thing. So that means that any classical new form gives rise to an irreducible GL2QP action or representation. And now let me say a little bit about GL2QP representations. Smooth GL2QP representations. I guess another remark I could make is that it's also clear that all these KM invariants are in fact finite dimensional, just because MP to the M is a space, several copies of a classical space of modular forms is finite dimensional. So from this one sees that the dimension is in fact countable. So it's infinite dimensional, but it's countably infinite dimensional. And it sort of consists of F and all the possible old forms. I mean, slightly, what should I say? Slightly enhanced, because we have these different components of modular curves for higher levels n. We have more than one component, so one somehow doesn't quite see this classically. Okay, so now about smooth GL2QP representations. Suppose, and this will also bring us back to Hecke actions, suppose pi is an irreducible smooth GL2QP representation. Let K be GL2ZP. And define the Hecke algebra in this context to be the double coset algebra of GL2QP modulo K. So it has a basis consisting of double cosets of K. And this double coset algebra, just as in the case of classical Hecke actions, I guess I didn't talk about double cosets in the classical one, but you should have seen this before. This, and I will say what it is, this acts on the space of K invariants in pi, namely by the formula that K, how does a double coset KGK act? For G in GL2QP, we write it as a union of disjoint union of single cosets G alpha K. It's some finite union of left or right cosets. And we get on some element F in pi K, we get that the double coset operator acts on it as the sum of G alpha F. So the choice of G alpha doesn't matter because F is invariant under K by assumption. So we get this finite linear combination. and this is the Hecke action we get from GL to QP representations, a particular form of the Hecke action. And now the main theorem in this context is that of Satake. And this is just a weak form, in fact, of what he proved, but it says that HP is a commutative polynomial algebra. It's generated by two operators, TP and SP, where SP is inverted. So they are the double coset operators associated to the diagonal elements P and 1, and P and P. So in particular, it's a commutative algebra, which is not clear from the definition. If you just see how two different cosets act one after another on F, it's not obvious that it's the same if you do it the other way around. This is something special about GL2ZP here. One could use a different group, and then it's no longer commutative. And now let's... okay, and then from this, one deduces the following theorem. If our irreducible smooth GL2QP representation has K fixed vectors, not all of them do, few of them do in some sense, but they are important, then the dimension of the space of K invariants is 1. And pi is determined by the HP eigenvalues on the space of k-fixed vectors. So we just have a one-dimensional space of k-fixed vectors. So HP just scales every element of every double coset, just acts by some scalar. And in fact, by the previous theorem, we only need to know what TP does and what SP does. So there are just two numbers which specify such an irreducible representation uniquely. So in our particular case, we have pi fp, the k invariance, just by what I did before, the k invariance is what takes us down to sort of the second coordinate going away completely. It doesn't matter at all. So it's just modulo of those things that arise in level one. So in other words, it's pi fp intersect level one modular form, so we just get multiples of F. I mean, this is in general what Atkin Lena tells us, that if we start with a new form, we only get one thing back, a one-dimensional space back, even if we do the whole GL2QP action. And so we need to know, in order to determine the representation, we need to know what TP does and what SP does. So TPF, it's just the previous TP, so you can verify this by calculating. So TPF is just PAP times F. And then SPF is not something that's, well, okay, that's what's classically also denoted by SP, and it just gives, since we have, it just gives P to the, in my normalization, it gives P to the K. F. So these two scalars, AP and K, they, which is what determines the representation pi FP. So AP plus the weight K determine pi FP. And as I said, this doesn't just work for level one model of new forms, but it works for any new forms of level prime to P. But the good thing is, for most primes P, whatever your level is, it will be prime to P. And so at almost all primes P, all of those that don't divide the level, we get one of these nice GL2QP representations, which are uniquely determined by AP. And this leads to the local Langlands correspondence. these representations. And I'll end by some comments about that. So we have the irreducible smooth GL2QP representations pi with k fixed vectors, pi k is not zero, on the one hand. But then by Satake, we know the, or by what I stated is, but essentially by what Satake did, so these are uniquely parameterized by the Hecke eigenvalues. And then, so this is the part of Satake I didn't tell you about. In fact, so this SP and TP are in some sense not really so canonical, but one has something very canonical, which or something actually canonical, which is a conjugacy class in GL2C. So one has associated a conjugacy class, and I can tell you what it is, alpha P, beta P, in GL2C, its characteristic polynomial characterizes it. It's x squared minus APX plus p to the k minus 1, just like in the L function. And then a conjugacy class gives us an unramified Galois representation. An unramified Galois representation, and I'll put this in quotes, gal of QP bar QP to GL2C. Well, inertia is trivial, so the only thing that matters is Frobenius, and Frobenius is just sent to this conjugacy class. And then the bijection we get on the top is local Langlands, sort of the unramified local Langlands. But as I said, for a fixed modular form of some level, we get this for almost all primes P. And I was cheating slightly because one doesn't have such continuous maps always. If alpha p and beta p are not of absolute value 1, which they aren't going to be here, if k is at least 2, then such a map actually doesn't exist. So one has to actually, if one wants to do this properly, one has to either replace the Galois group by a subgroup, the Weigl group, or one has to replace the complex numbers by the Eliadic numbers. But that's the idea. And in the general local Langlands correspondence gives you a parameterization of irreducible GL2QP representations without the unramified condition pi k not equal to 0 by all Galois representations of this kind without the unramified condition. And let me just end by giving you an idea what it does more concretely. So what's the more general picture without having too much time to give all the details of the notations, I guess. But so on the one hand, in the GL2QP picture, so we have GL2QP representations and we have Galois representations. On the one hand, we have, so a rough classification goes as follows. One has principal series representations, which are induced representations, like for finite groups. But I will not be able to write down the exact definition of chi 1 tensor chi 2, where chi I are characters of QP cross, and chi 1 chi 2 inverse is not equal to the absolute value to the plus or minus 1. So these representations are what arises from the unramified representations. The unramified representations, the ones with k fixed vectors, are particular examples of such principal series representations. So for example, a level 1 modular form gives rise to such a representation at all primes p. And then on the Galois side, sort of just like here, we get a direct sum of two one-dimensional representations. And if one normalizes things correctly, one gets chi1 plus chi2. But then there are these cases when chi1, chi2 inverse is equal to the absolute value to the plus minus 1. In this case, this principal series breaks up as a one-dimensionalless and another infinite-dimensional representation, which is called a special representation. So special representation, it's the Steinberg representation, which is one of the things one gets by breaking this up, twisted by some character. So they're all the same up to some twist. Chi is a character of QP cross. And correspondingly, in the same principal series that breaks up, one gets the one-dimensional representation, chi composed with determinant. And they go to almost the same Galois representation. So the special representation goes to chi absolute value to the 1/2, chi absolute value to the negative 1/2. So like this, this is the kind of thing you see in an elliptic curve with semi-stable reduction. Or in the one-dimensional case, one gets the same thing, but without an extension. So here star is non-split. And this first case arises in level gamma 0p. If you have a new form of level p, gamma 0p, you get something special. And the one-dimensional representation does not arise from modular forms, which is clear because by construction, from F, you get all the possible old forms living in the representation. We cannot get something one-dimensional. And finally, there's all the rest. And one just gave a name to all the rest, and it's called, and they are the supercuspidal representations on the left. So finally, one has supercuspidal representations, and the missing representations on the right are the irreducible ones. So these are the most difficult cases. I think I should stop here.